guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Justin had a huge impact on this game. It just didn't show up in the stat sheet, but that's not good enough. That's not good enough. I've got to do a better job giving Justin, different, aspects of lining up in different spots, different personnel groupings, whatever I need to do to help him because he's an ultra competitor, and we'll get him going. But, you know, the first guy celebrating with KJ Osborne when he scores that touchdown is Justin Jefferson, and he's a great teammate. Although he doesn't have a C on his chest, I know our guys view him as one of our leaders, and we relied on him today.
Oh, I can see a Zolgad column on Vikings Wire, USA Today. Zolgad.
Yep, it's out.
Teammates don't think highly enough of Justin Jefferson to make him a captain.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it is weird. They got a lot of captains, and I don't know. I don't know what happened there.
Not a great leader.
Got to look into it.
And we'll get to statements here on this Vikings Victory Monday across both Mackie and Judd and Purple Daily. You can find Vikings Vent Line if you missed it. It was not quite the celebration of week one because I think a lot of people like lined up to tee off on the Vikings and then they won the game at the end. So it was probably more criticism of the Vikings, people just frustrated by what they watched for the majority of the game. But you can find that on the Purple Daily podcast feed and YouTube channel. So I am on the Jefferson front. My first thought was, come on, Kevin. You can't say that Jefferson made a huge impact on the game. He pretty much was non-existent, right? There are some screenshots, some great ones here from the All-22. This one's from Alec Lewis, the new Athletic Vikings beat writer.
He's very good, by the way.
Like, I don't know if he's athletic, but he works for the Athletic, and he's a beat writer.
He's in really good shape. He's Declan-like, size-wise.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't call myself in good shape, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, he's thin. You're thin. Okay. Like, you don't look like you're out of shape. I would never say, Declan Goff, lose some weight. You don't look good.
Okay. So, Alec, that guy, he posted a screenshot here. The second to last play. So KJ Osborne had two huge catches back-to-back to win the game. And the concept here was Jefferson was on the left side of the line of scrimmage. I believe he was the outside receiver. And then KJ Osborne started off on the right side of the formation. So Osborne has one defender trailing him as he reaches sort of the logo. He's running across the Vikings logo. And then Justin Jefferson is running probably 3 yards on top of him further down the field, running a crossing pattern over the top. And there are two Lions defenders. One of them's literally grabbing Justin Jefferson 15 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
The other one is 2 yards behind him, trailing him. And then there's a safety over the top, shoulders turned toward Justin Jefferson. Three defenders were on Justin Jefferson the second to last play of the game, and KJ Osborne just went right past all of them, wide open to set up what eventually became the game winning. So you can have an impact on a game by just existing, and Justin Jefferson did that yesterday. But we'll probably get – I'm guessing one of us has a Justin Jefferson statement. Okay.
There's plenty to get to it, Jefferson.
But can I start you guys here with a little Kirky boy statement here?
Absolutely.
A little Kirky. Kirkerson. Okay. Here's the first statement. Kirk Cousins is unstoppable in noon games against the Lions. These are his Super Bowls historically.
Oh my God. You know what's going to happen now. You know
this
what
is this,
is gonna result
this is
in.
Praise.
I know, but you're going to get the Mackie says that he can only beat the Lions. You know that's what the response
then,
is going
then
to
those,
be.
No, I'm not saying he can only beat the Lions. I'm saying he is unstoppable in noon games against the Lions. If there are some Kirk Crusaders out there that want to project their emotions and their insecurities back onto me, then that's fine. You can do that. This was Kirk's ninth noon game against the Lions since he joined the Vikings. If you take his numbers and extrapolate them over 17 games, so take his 9 games he's played as a Viking, noon against the Lions, and make it a 17-game season, 75% completions, which I think would be an NFL record, 37 touchdowns, 4 interceptions only, and a 120 passer rating, which I think would flirt with the highest. Like Pat Mahomes, I think, was like a 122 one season or something.
Yep.
And multiple fourth quarter comebacks. And so if you want sheer dominance, and he wasn't even that great for the first part of that game,
nope.
But he comes back, boom, dagger, KJ Osborne. Good luck finding a more unstoppable force at quarterback than Kirk in noon games against the Lions.
I would guess that this was perhaps as a Viking, one of his worst statistical games, like just raw stats, against Detroit. So, again, I'll take the win. Don't care. But, yeah, it is amazing because he did set up the drive last year in October at the same stadium against Detroit for the Greg Joseph field goal that then was followed by what I guess was a near fight between the coach and quarterback. Well, that's not good. But, yeah, he is he rebounded very nicely. I saw Dex put the stats on our Twitter account, his fourth quarter yesterday. It was rather remarkable.
Well, off the top of your head, what were his fourth quarter stats? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was like 9 of 13, a buck 20, a touchdown, a 120 rating. He was excellent. And obviously the fourth quarter comeback. So, yes, he was very, very good in the fourth quarter.
You know, my wife and I were watching football with a friend yesterday, watching the Gophers game, who's not from like Minnesota or anything, but was talking about her fantasy team and saying that she has Kirk Cousins and then somebody else. Like two of those quarterbacks you would just kind of rotate back and forth. And she said, yeah, I played Kirk in that Philadelphia game. And he just killed me in that game. And I said, I need to be your Kirk Cousins fantasy consultant. Because what I would have told you and advised you is don't play him on Monday night road game Eagles.
Yep.
That's likely to be a disaster. Wait one more week for the bounce back noon game at home against the Lions. Uh-huh. And he didn't have a great fantasy day, but he had a couple touchdowns. The yardage wound up being pretty high.
He's fine.
So just if you are rotating quarterbacks in your fantasy league, road games, tough opponents, prime time, you know, fade it. Noon Lions, noon Giants home, noon Jets home. You're good to go.
Your
I think most people know
fantasy
that.
Football like that. League advisor.
Three accountant position.
Charger. Be $15.
That'll be,
for every consultation.
You can Venmo me.
Or just make it 20.
Just Venmo me. All right, Judd, statement.
All right, so my statement is this, and I'm going to project ahead, and I know that this guy had a good game on Sunday, and I know that this guy ultimately is an important part of this team, but I am not going to be upset if Dalvin Cook does not play after, again, dislocating his shoulder on Sunday. Next Sunday against the Saints in London. I think that there's enough different things that this team can do, and I believe that the running back depth is sufficient enough that I would not mind a look-see that would allow Cook probably just to stay home and recover as opposed to being in the time period, and this did exist at one point where it's like, oh my God, can Cook come back in this game? He'll wear a harness. It's all, you know, he's got to play. I'd be very comfortable with resting him for a week to make sure he's recovered. And I'm not so sure that your offense wouldn't be just fine.
You also have the weird non-bye week afterwards. Like usually you go to London, you get a bye week, and they have to go to London, then come back and play. And they get it's a game against the Bears, but maybe saving Dalvin Cook and not having him play banged up, just keep him a little fresher for that Bears game when the rest of the team isn't going to be that fresh.
That's another good point. I didn't think of it that way.
It's not like the Saints aren't some juggernaut. You're going to get like three interceptions off Jameis Winston at some point. So I'm kind of with you on this one. If we're talking about, he's going to rush back and wear a harness, it's like,
Just rest. Rest it up, buddy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Take a load off.
All right, Declan.
I'll rip off the Justin Jefferson Band-Aid statement here, and I'll say something seems off with Justin Jefferson. So he's had some drops. He's clearly frustrated. He was frustrated against the Eagles. He was frustrated, obviously, yesterday against the Lions. Now he's being locked up for the first time in his career. I think finally teams are saying, let's take away Justin Jefferson, and can the Vikings still beat us? Now the Vikings are 2-3, and he had a career day against the Packers, but so far opponents are 1-1 in that plan. And I don't think this is like a bad thing or it's a full-on Zolgad plan for panic of a 10 out of 10 scale. But we just haven't seen the same Justin Jefferson these last 2 weeks. And the offense might need to spread around some wealth, but the offense has to funnel through Justin Jefferson. He's a game-changing wide receiver. And it just feels like we might be on the precipice of another JJ breakout game. Like, I don't see a guy who just stays quiet for three straight games. Odds are he'll probably bounce back against the Saints. But just looking at these last two in just the frame of the last two games and from the 30,000-foot view, something just seems off with the Vikings star receiver, and I'm still trying to kind of pinpoint what exactly it is.
So you think there's something deeper here, like a conspiratorial thing that isn't just defenses scheming?
Correct. Yeah, I think, and just look at, I mean, I know I'd talked about Adam Thielen, you know, throwing the temper tantrums, but like the Jefferson actual body language is frustration. Like he's frustrated at the drops. He's frustrated at probably the targets. He's frustrated that he's not getting the ball maybe in big situations. Yes, I do think there's something kind of bubbling a little bit here.
Well, the good news is, and Kevin O'Connell referenced this in the clip that we played, he was one of the first guys to congratulate KJ Osborne. And then in the locker room, love when that. KOC gave KJ Osborne the game ball, the first guy to walk up to him was Justin Jefferson, all excited. So I don't think it's something pouty where I'm not getting the ball, I'm going to have bad attitude. I would say, and the Fox crew at one point, I think it was Brady Quinn was on the color commentating job, and I wrote this quote down. He said, "The Lions are doubling Justin Jefferson on every play. They just aren't going to let him get the football." And I think what bothers me is we heard that exact thing last year in a Lions game where it was, well, look at that. They're playing safety help over the top on Justin Jefferson in every play. What can the Vikings possibly do? And Kevin O'Connell came in here and he was supposed to be the schematic elixir to this problem, right? That we aren't going to let defenses dictate who gets the ball. If we want to get the ball to Jefferson on 12 targets, we're going to do that because that's how we roll. And so either KOC isn't doing a good enough job of that, or Justin Jefferson, if he wants to be one of the best receivers in the NFL, if he wants to be the guy at the top of the wide receiver food chain, then you got to find a way to flash open in some of these windows. Like, this isn't going to change. Yep. Or are there times where he is option number three, but Kirk doesn't want to thread the needle too tight of a window, 50-50 ball, whatever, and so he's moving to other options? Maybe it's a combination of all three, but it shouldn't be that easy to take Justin Jefferson out of a game. Oh, right. He's just out of the game.
And the whole purpose.
Really?
Is, yeah. Yeah. In fact, if I can jump in, I would like to make the next statement off of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Kevin O'Connell remains a work in progress as a play caller. And I think that's a very important part of the discussion. It is one thing to watch Sean McVay scheme Cooper Kupp open consistently. Sean McVay is one of the most brilliant young minds in football, probably in the world today. Like, you don't get a coaching tree at his age and not be doing something really spectacularly right.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, in O'Connell's, I guess it's sort of in his defense, but there should be hopefully a pretty quick maturation here. You know, you can look on film at JJ and be like, oh, okay, if I did this and I do that. And we sort of did this with Kupp. But keep in mind, KOC did not call plays there. So, like, he was observing and probably helping behind the scenes, but he was not the guy calling plays. So I think what we are seeing, and this definitely 1,000% involves Jefferson, and I think the first game might have been a little bit unfair because he got off to such a great start. And then your expectations are like, oh, this is going to be a weekly thing. But I think what we're seeing is this. I think O'Connell is, and Kirk too, are becoming comfortable with what the offense is supposed to do. And like, it was weird through two games that Thielen became a non-factor of sorts. Like, he got some garbage time or some catches in the Monday night game, but that was, I believe, in the first half, zero targets. Mm-hmm. KJ Osborne, basically, I think, just got involved in a big way yesterday. So, again, I know this sounds weird coming from me, but I think to make any grand assumptions about it's working or not, it's just going to take more time. It's going to take more time. I mean, O'Connell's trying to get his play calling, which he's doing in-game, which is incredibly tough because he's trying to coach the team too. But he's trying to get his play calling through to Kirk. Kirk is very meticulous about things. Mm. And now we're trying to get the ball to Jefferson, and it doesn't help that he's dropped balls or, in the case of the Monday night game, flat out ran the route poorly. Yeah. So my point is that this is a work in progress, and I think it's very hard to assess it three games in, and I think it's going to morph and change. I mean, Dalvin Cook in game two had 6 carries.
Yeah.
That's not like, I'm all for don't go zim, run, 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 but 6 carries is ridiculous. So I think it's just going to take some time.
Yeah, and I think it makes it easier and gives you a longer runway to kind of work through some of the kinks when you win games. If you start 0-3, or like, what do you think the vibe is around Josh McDaniels and the Vegas Raiders right now? They're 0-3.
Not good. Not good. Devontae's already pissed.
Right. So if you were 2-1,
that's what we should have.
And working some things out like the Vikings are.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Whatever. Like, this doesn't feel entirely right. There's a bunch of things that we need to figure out. But at the end of the day, we're 2-1, and so we've bought ourselves a couple rough games here and there. If we lose a game, we'll figure it out. We're not sunk at this point, like maybe the Raiders are. So, on the other side, on the Adam Thielen side, here's my next statement. Adam Thielen was a forgotten man there for a while, but he remains incredible in the red zone. So he flashed wide open on the Vikings' first touchdown yesterday. He was targeted only once in the red zone leading up to this game. But if you go back now, including yesterday, to the beginning of last season, Adam Thielen, when targeted in the red zone, 14 catches on 16 targets, 10 touchdowns. Think about that.
Yeah.
16 targets in the red zone, 14 catches,
great.
10 touchdowns. The guy is ridiculous in the red zone and should probably be your first, especially because he's so great in the red zone flashing open, but defenses are going to still pay more attention to Justin Jefferson because he's the scarier wide receiver.
Yes.
So just when in doubt, find Adam Thielen, find those hands flashing somewhere in the zone. He also became the fourth undrafted player since 1967 with 50 career touchdown receptions, joining Antonio Gates, Rod Smith, and Wes Welker. So that's quite the accomplishment for an undrafted player. So I know that you guys are all pissed about his temper tantrum, but I want to shine a light on a guy that should not just be forgotten here. Go find him in the red zone, for God's sakes.
We are not pissed. You're painting it inaccurately. We are just tired
of his tantrum.
We are tired of his tantrums. This is not Edina High
School. I want emotion. I want
fire.
This
is not the Lake South.
I want passion.
This is, yeah, exactly. Not, I'm ripping my helmet off now. Mom and Dad, did you see that? I got screwed on that call by the referee.
Oh, well, the call would have made a lot of people mad because at the time it ended the game and it was a bad call. But we already litigated this.
So. We litigated it.
All right, we're back to Declan here, and this next statement is going to be presented by our friends at Spiralite Candle. It is Victory Candle Monday here, boys.
That's right.
Light it up.
That's right. And that means that it's time to check out Judd's Purple Positivity Candle. You know what? The Purple Positivity Candle is great because if things aren't going well, you light that Spiralite Candle, and it calms the nerves, right?
What about
it,
the fourth quarter comeback candle?
Well, that's what this is, too, that's the thing. That's what makes a candle so great. It can calm or it can be cause for celebration, which it was on Sunday. SpiralLightCandles.com. SpiralLightCandles.com. If you're trying to find a gift for a mom, your wife, girlfriend, I'm going to tell you right now, SpiralLightCandles are worth checking out. They will love them. It makes a great gift. SpiralLightCandles.com, the place to go.
And hey, if you're into fall golf, like two-thirds of this show is for sure, no better place.
The Meadows at Mystic Lake, an award-winning 18-hole public golf course, just a little jaunt down the Twin Cities. You can get down there. Maybe you'll even see the fall colors. The best part about Meadows, it's one of the most scenic courses around. So now we're getting a little closer to fall and that fall golf weather, whether you're rocking the PJ Fleck quarter zip, maybe you're going the full pullover. I know Macadac Moore is like the quarter zip kind of guy. Maybe he rocks the polo underneath. The tie could be on. I saw him on Saturday celebrating a Gopher win. But regardless, when you're on the tee times there, you want to make sure you're nice and comfortable, and the Meadows at Mystic Lake is one of the best places to be. Book your tee time now. GolfTheMeadows.com, GolfTheMeadows.com to learn more. Okay, my next statement. I need a little more from Danielle Hunter. So through three games so far, Danielle Hunter has just two pressures, one sack. You know, he's supposed to be really the linchpin of this defense, and he's been playing a ton of snaps. He's actually logged 168 snaps through three games, and the pass rush was going to be the most important thing for the Vikings because obviously there's still question marks on the cornerback side, the safety side, the linebacker side we're seeing getting exposed a little bit. There's still some bend but don't break qualities. They haven't allowed fourth quarter points. That's all gravy, but they need their defensive line to start getting after the quarterback more, starting with Danielle Hunter. And I know he's only played, what, 7-8 games, basically, since the 2019 season. But the dude is still 27 years old. He turns 28 in a month. It is up to him, who has been historically one of the best pass rushers in the NFL from when he debuted through 2019. But so far, it's just been a little lackluster for him, and he really needs to step up, in my opinion, to start getting after the quarterback more and being the force that he was to be reckoned with previously before he has a big injury in 2020. I need a little more from Danielle Hunter.
Dude, two pressures through three games. Yeah, I'm looking at this on Pro Football Reference right now. The top pressure getters are Alex Highsmith with 10, Shaq Barrett with 10, and Nick Bosa with 10, and then a bunch of other dudes with 9... 8-7, you know, he should be, yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, the guy hasn't played much football in the last couple of years, but if they can't, and we mentioned this on Purple Daily, the Vikings have one of the lowest team pressure rates on defense in the NFL too. So if they can't get pressure with Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith, and Za'Darius has 5, so he's at least been buzzing around a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
This defense without Danielle Hunter the last 2 years when he's injured is one of the worst in the NFL. So if he's not going to have an impact, then it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. All right, let's go back to Judd here. He jumped out of order. We'll keep that,
that same order going.
Go ahead.
All right. Statement on the defense as well. My statement is this. Start by stopping the run. Pressure is nice and pressure is necessary. But this defense has now given up 100 plus yards in all three games, and they consistently get gouged there. And I think that's you have to be better. And I'm not saying great, but you have to be better against the run consistently. For instance, I believe it was on a 3rd and 12 late in the game yesterday, Detroit got a 10 yard gain and it was almost 12. Almost a first down on a 3rd and long in which you ran and had the confidence to run because you know you can run. That's a starting point for me. So I really want to see, while the pressure does need to improve, and Dex is right on Hunter, what I want to see is step one, you have to be more stout against the run. You're making it far too simple. You can't be, what feels like it at least, statistically giving up 6 to 8 yard chunks. We saw that the last 2 years. I thought it was supposed to be improved. Again, I'm not saying it has to be 2007 good when it was unbelievable, but I am saying that to be a defense that can win tough games, you can't be getting chunked on runs as much as the Vikings are right now.
Yeah, let's do a quick statistical examination of the Vikings defense here real quick. So they are, let's give you a few key metrics. So they are 19th in yards per carry against. They're averaging 4.7 yards per attempt against.
Okay.
The Colts, Niners, Bills are all under 3 yards per attempt against. So those are kind of the gold standard. So they're slightly below average in terms of yards per attempt against. Passing defense, let's include some sack yards in here. So average net yards against, including sack yardage. Jesus, the Bills. 3. The Bills' defense has been absurd, and they lost yesterday, but their defense was actually pretty good. Vikings are 16th, smack dab in the middle of that metric as well. And then if you just want to go total yards per play, so everything included, total yards per play allowed, the Vikings' defense ranks 26th by that metric.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere between, like, middle of the pack and, you know, 26th, that's probably accurate. And they've in the red zone, I'll pull this up to you real quick. Let's do third downs. Vikings defense on third down, 12th best. They're allowing 34% on third down, so respectable. And then red zone percentage, so percentage of red zone trips that result in a touchdown, they rank 20th, 63% of trips. So they're kind of a mid-pack, maybe like top of the bottom third defensively through three games. Points allowed, they're actually one of the better defenses.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of underlying things here that if you don't fix them, you're probably going to give up a 30-burger or multiple at some point, right?
I love that too.
I'll give you one more here from my bag of statements. With everything that's happened and everything we've dissected through the first 3 weeks, my statement is the Vikings are exactly where they're supposed to be after three games. 2-1 start. I think everyone would have taken that. They're showing some nice flashes offensively. Fourth quarter comeback, first half against Green Bay. There you can kind of see, oh, this offense at its best, you can see what this would look like. But then they're kind of sputtering, trying to hone it. And a defense that generally does enough to give the offense a chance so far, with a ton of room for improvement in the pressure department. So a 2-1 start with some nice flashes and a ton of room for improvement is, I think, where I thought they were going to be after three games. Mm-hmm. And now we see if they can actually make that improvement.
Yeah, I think, yes. I think the Packers game altered expectations a lot.
Yeah.
I think the Packers game was such a beatdown of Green Bay that fans are like, oh, man, this works. It's going to be great. And that game was fun. But the thing about that game is that game's not how games go. But I think because of that, like, if you had asked in training camp, 2-1 start, I think every Vikings fan says, absolutely, that's great. But then they saw the Packers game and they're like, oh. And then the Philadelphia game was really bad. Like, that started off really bad. And so I think because the angst that I sensed on Ventline yesterday was very interesting. Like, and I know it wasn't a great game, and I know, but you know what? You won the game. And by the way, you didn't win the game on a 60-yard field goal. You won it on Kirk Cousins' arm.
Yeah.
So, like, there was the entire game, not good. The end result? Yeah, okay. Yep. Take that. The Packers game, I think, changed things.
Yeah.
Unfairly.
We might have been a little guilty of that. I think we had the Vikings as like the fourth best team in the NFL in our power rankings.
But dude, this league.
The first week.
But look at the scores yesterday.
Yeah. Crazy league?
It's an absolutely nuts league.
Yeah.
Bleeping Chargers got blown out of home by Jacksonville.
Mm. That's not entirely shocking to at least one person on the show that told you they were
going to win
their
division. Okay, here we go. Victory laps.
What has old Macadac told you about the Jaguars?
You know what? We're going
to
get back. I think Declan's
going to
have
something
to talk about.
You want to go down that vein? Because I thought the head coaching favorite and the genius that was Brandon Staley is going to have those Chargers looking good. And oh, man, look at this. They're 1-2 all of a sudden.
I didn't mean to do this, okay? I didn't mean to start this. I was just crazy.
That game may have validated a couple takes on the Mackie and Judd and Purple Daily Show. Remember when old Macadac got laughed at, mocked by the masses 2 years ago for putting Joe Burrow 10th in his preseason quarterback rankings? Can't do that.
Yeah, you were laughed at.
And then he got laughed at again this season for putting Trevor Lawrence in his top, I think it was 12. Now, what do you think of Trevor Lawrence now, huh? Huh? Maybe quit making fun of old
Macadac. It's a
Macadac
victory lap. You know what? Let's get back on course here. I'm going to wave the flag. There it is. I'm waving the flag. We're back on course. Viking statements.
Amazing. Victory Monday here on Mackie and Judd. And you know what? Popular demand has surfaced here. And it has told us to bring back an oldie but a goodie, not an oldie, a segment from last year on Purple Daily with Boone. We're going to have Declan fire someone's ass every week here on Mac.
You just made the list.
So, Declan, who in the world of sports should have their ass on the line today?
So, I was going on the chopping block, you know, late last night to see whose ass should be fired, because there's candidates all over the place. I can look. You just basically teased about it in the AFC West right now, which turned out what I thought was going to be the best division in football to being an absolute gong show through 3 weeks. There's coordinators at play. Surprisingly, all those coaches and coordinators are safe for this week. I am not
in that
firing.
Whole division? The whole division?
Whole division, and then also in the entire NFL. I'm actually not going to fire a coach, a coordinator, a player, or an owner today. So yesterday morning, I slept in. First time I had slept in late in months. I woke up at about 10:30. It was glorious. Yeah. I haven't slept in that late in forever. Vinny was at grandma's, so no worry about taking the dog out. So it was perfect. Gal and I slept in, got coffee. It was great. Watching television on a great TCL TV. And I turn on the Fox pregame show. And I watch five bumbling buffoons try to go their way through a pregame show. And even though it's part of our youth, it's really the only big pregame show I've ever known. It is time to fire the Fox pregame show. It is time to move on from all five of these guys. Terry Bradshaw has no idea what he's talking about. He has no, Terry Bradshaw's literally I think this is how, he has no idea what he's literally talking about. The fastest 2 minute drill for halftime is a disaster. The whole pregame show, it does nothing. Howie Long has been wearing the same suit for 20 years, dude.
You're crapping on Howie Long?
It's time to move on.
He's had the same haircut, too.
Yeah, he hasn't looked, he has not,
he's a good looking older man.
He has not looked the same. Not even with all due respect, because I'm firing all of them. There is no respect here. It's time to move on. Get a new Fox pregame show. Let's try something different. Even if there's hiccups, even if there's people we plug in that don't work, I'm done with the Fox pregame show.
You just made the list.
You're fired.
Oh, my God. So I love where you're going here. All right. I can't. My options are pretty limited before the game because I can't watch the ESPN pregame show. I love most of the cast on that show. I can't get past the way that Samantha Ponder acted toward people on Christian Ponder Twitter back like 10 years ago. She just went on a blocking rampage of anyone. She had a search bar open for Christian Ponder tweets and just blocked half of Minnesota when she was here 10 years ago. And that rubbed me the wrong way so much that I just like,
I get it.
It's hard for me to watch that pregame show. Generally, the Fox NFL Sunday, NFL Network is fun. They do a great job, a lot of fun segments there. But to Dex's point, I'm just pulling up a list here. You know, these guys have been with that show. Kurt Menefee took over for James Brown in 2006.
Yeah.
Terry Bradshaw started in 1994. Yeah, Howie Long, 1994. Jimmy Johnson, 1994, took a few years off to coach the Dolphins. Came back in 2001, and Michael Strahan's now been on that show since 2007. Mm-hmm. So it's been the exact same cast for 15 years and largely the same cast for the better part of 30 years on the Fox pregame show.
And that was their first year, too. 94 is their first year of doing football.
Hell, Terry would have started 10 years before that if they would have let him.
Terry did. Because I think he was a game analyst, if I'm not mistaken, on the NFC package CBS lost to Fox.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but Dex, you're right about Terry. Terry's just, it's just all, it used to be funny. And because, I mean, that's
funny.
Well, and that show originally like reset the pregame show entirely. Because like before that, it was like a half hour serious, you know, we're going to do this and that. And then their jovial shtick actually worked for a long time, but it's been a long time. I would argue network NFL pregame shows, I don't even touch them now. Like if I'm going to dip in ESPN, NFL Network.
Well, but it's more like just having something on in the, right. In the lead up, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just don't, yeah.
I'm not like sitting there, you know, taking notes or anything.
Right, yeah. It's nice to have
I don't just have like, any time for it. I want
the football vibe. I just like the football vibe.
You know what I do?
In the morning.
Red Zone. Listen to the countdown music, and then you hear Scotty Hansen, and that means it's Sunday.
I love it. Judge just sitting in front, like the poltergeist, staring at
5 minutes. 5 minutes. It just counts down the clock, and you get the football tunes playing.
He looks over to Don. It's like it's here. He's just ready to go.
Yep.
You know, I.
You're right.
I hate to. I don't mean to encroach on Declan's turf here, but I kind of want to fire someone too.
Okay.
I kind of want to fire someone, too.
Oh, I think I know
it's college football related.
Can I take a guess at where this person works?
Well, should I do it now, or should we talk some gophers first, and then I do it after gophers?
Let's talk some gophers.
All right, you go ahead. Let's do some gopher statements, and then I will steal Declan's segment. Declan wants someone's ass fired. I will fire someone. We'll see if Judd can correctly
guess
it.
I think I know exactly where this guy works.
But we've been celebrating this Vikings Victory Monday here on the show today. But I don't think we should forget about the other Victory Monday. That's right.
I don't have a banner.
I got my Gopher hat on, Gopher basketball, but that's okay. We'll get a Gopher football hat at some point. Let's get into some gopher-related statements, and if I could do the honors here as the chief boat rower of the show. The Gophers are now 4-0 on the season, and they have jumped into the top 25 rankings for the first time. And my first statement is, the disrespect is palpable of this Gophers team. This team has destroyed all four teams they've played, including two Power 5 teams. Okay, I get that Colorado is not a very good team, yeah, but it's a Power 5 team. And Michigan State was ranked, what, 11th a week and a half ago?
Before they played Washington.
Yeah. They didn't just, like, forget how to play football entirely. I get that they've had a couple rough weeks against two. Washington's a legit team. And the Gophers are a legit team. The Gophers are ranked only 21st and 23rd in the AP and the coaches' polls. Hmm. They are absolutely one of the 15 best teams in the country. And if these cowards had any courage whatsoever, they would have vaulted the Gophers up closer to the top 10. These coward, I don't know who these voters are, these coaches, these Associated Press, these nerd writers, cowards. This is one of the most dominant force college football teams outside of Ohio State and Alabama. And I am excited to row this boat straight to Pasadena or straight to the college football playoff.
Well,
let's get it.
And that's the poll that you care about. Has nothing to do with the Associated Press or the coaches poll. The poll that you care about, I believe, will debut in November, the college football playoff poll.
Yes.
Because that's the one where if this continues, you'll be getting some respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. You'll be getting some well-deserved respect.
So here's the current AP poll that has the Gophers. This is the friendliest poll. They've got the Gophers 21st, okay?
Yep.
You got Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan. These are all pretty fine. Like, Clemson struggled with Wake Forest, but Wake Forest is a good team. Wake Forest moved down from 21st to 22nd. USC, Kentucky, Tennessee, Oklahoma State, NC State, Penn State, all these are undefeated. I'm fine with all these. Utah, 3-1. Oregon, 3-1. Ole Miss, undefeated. Washington, undefeated. They're 15th. Baylor, 3-1. Now we get into, like, the reputations here, okay? Baylor, 3-1. Texas A&M, 3-1. Oklahoma, 3-1. BYU, 3-1. Arkansas, 3-1. A lot of reputation in those five or six spots ahead of the Gophers, okay? Sure. A Gophers team that, by the way, beat Auburn less than 3 years ago in a January 1st bowl game. So it's not like, and the Gophers kind of went toe-to-toe with Ohio State for the first three quarters last year, too, at the opener. So they can hang with some good teams and beat some good teams. I just think this team is, with their schedule, too, unless they have an unfortunate blip, hopefully not, 21st will be disrespectful in retrospect.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Just had to get that off my chest there to start the show. Back over to Judd here.
All right, off the Michigan State game, and there are plenty of things to talk about. But I want to, my first statement is just going to be a meat and potatoes football statement, and that is the Gophers kicked ass in East Lansing. And here's why that's important. Not only was this a shellacking on the road, which is impressive, but you know what this was? This was physical domination. The Gophers did what you want, I think, any team in football to do, and that is they quickly took away Michigan State's will to even be playing in that game.
Football.
They physically abused them. Ibrahim was, I mean, he was literally carrying tacklers down the field. The lines, offensive and defensive, were outstanding. This is the blueprint for what you want, which is, you know what? Tanner Morgan played great, and that's fantastic, and you hit some really nice plays. But the opening statement was essentially what I thought the Eagles did to the Vikings on Monday night. They hit him in the face. And then in the Gophers' case, they did it again and again and again. And every time you thought, oh, that's interesting, Michigan State might start to rally here. What did the Gophers do? They took away their will to be playing against them. That was as physically a dominating win in Minnesota football as I can recall seeing in recent years. And that, to me, is the most encouraging sign. It wasn't high-flying. It was literally manhandling them.
Is there anything more football than a group of men imposing their will on another team?
Football.
We are going to move you out of the way.
Correct.
The Gophers, too, it kind of feels like they're passing more, but I'd have to compare. To this to this point in the season, the Gophers are averaging 53 rush attempts per game, which is third most in the country behind Navy and Air Force.
Interesting.
Just ahead of Massachusetts, Arkansas, and Army. Okay. So they definitely aren't pumping the brakes on running the ball. 52 rush attempts per game for an average of almost 300 yards and 4.5 touchdowns. So I'll look it up. Maybe they are. It feels like they're more like capitalizing more on the passing game, but I don't know. They're definitely imposing football. Their will on the ground.
Love it.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so before I give my Gopher statement, just a quick little disclaimer. It shouldn't shock you guys, but also maybe some listeners who don't my backstory. I have had no interest in Gopher football like my entire life, mostly because like when I became a sports fan, like there were some nice years with Mace. Like I remember the debacle against Michigan, but you know it was like Brian Cupido and Adam Weber, and not a lot really to root for there. With the Gopher football team. 2019 happens, fun year. They beat Penn State. They're storming the field. Even from an outsider perspective, I was like, man, that's pretty cool. Try to get, you know, into it a little bit more in 2020 because the pandemic wiped out sports and thought, oh, this could be fun. And that was just kind of a really ugly, murky season. They weren't going to play. Then they were going to play. It was just ugly. And then last year, they started to pop up a little bit more. But I will say this as my statement. For the first time in my life, I am all in on the Gopher football team.
Wow.
For the first, you can call me a bandwagon fan. I don't care. Yeah. I am all in on the Gopher football team, baby. I am rowing this boat. They got a great run game. They have an obnoxious head coach who's perfect for college football. I have already committed to a tailgate in a month with friends. I said I will contribute the funds to the tailgate.
It's on Saturday against Purdue, baby.
And maybe there's multiple ones. I have committed to the Iowa one in a month. Or at the end of the season. I've already committed to a Gopher tailgate. I'm in.
Judd can get you into the most prominent, prestigious tailgate on campus. It is the Nadine Babu tailgate.
Yeah, drop by Saturday.
Okay.
That's good. I probably will.
Dawn.
You'll actually hang out with me outside of public? I know we went to a Twins game on Friday.
We went to a Twins game together.
Yeah, Judd and
I
went to a Twins
together.
Game on Friday.
We took a great picture.
Knocked back some beers.
It must have been tough for you guys. Just probably getting stopped in the concourse by adoring fans every 30 seconds.
It must have been really tough for you guys.
Here's the important thing. I have built up a persona. Nobody stops me now. It's outstanding. I actually walked the entire concourse from the press box at the Vikings game to the Surly Suite. And nobody stopped me.
Wow. Look at you, Mr. Celebrity, who has... Mr. Celebrity,
Omar,
you know that about
hanging out.
1,000 people probably recognized you because
Omar and
how
I.
wildly popular you are. But they know not to approach you in public because you know,
I put off that weird persona. Do you know how difficult it was to turn down a beer yesterday?
Oh, I bet.
Omar asked me, hey, do you want a beer? And I'm like, I'm working. I can't.
I'm a professional.
You know, I'm going to try to be a professional.
I don't want to have beer on my breath in the press box.
Yeah. But I turned down a Furious Aura Before I Die.
Oof. Wow. What a.
But yeah.
What a test of willpower.
I'm in.
By Judd.
I'm in on the Gopher football team.
Okay.
I'm all in, baby.
So I did look this up here, and it's tough because the numbers are always a little bit skewed in the first few games. You play some crappy opponents, it levels off in conference. But the Gophers ranked. So this year, they are third in rushing attempts. Last year, and that's out of how many Division I? That's out of 131 schools. Third. Last year, they were seventh. Okay. They've actually added 7 rushing attempts per game. Some of that might just be, you know, they're running more plays against bad teams or something.
Right.
But here's my next statement. Despite the fact that maybe they're still running the ball a lot... This is the Tanner Morgan we saw in 2019.
Uh-huh.
Stole my thunder, man. You're exactly right.
That's okay.
Now, it helps that he's about 38 years old. You know, he's he's like Aaron Rodgers' age.
Married now with like 5 kids.
I think he's on his 3rd marriage now. Not quite sure. But Tanner already, and he's got his offensive coordinator back from 2019. Mm-hmm. He already has 10 touchdown passes. He had 17 combined touchdown passes the last 2 seasons. So he is, I think he had 7 and then 10. So he's already tied for the most that he's had since 2019 in an individual season. He looks fairly poised. Even though he lost his top wide receiver target, he did a great job spreading the ball around. They just got, it seems like they have depth and targets all over the place that just kind of step up, and he's doing a great job, as he should, sixth year in college football. This is how he should look, and he's delivering this season.
10 guys caught passes, right?
I believe that is correct.
10 guys, yes. And what does Soraka do that makes Tanner so comfortable? It's incredible to watch now. Like,
well, some of it's probably
exactly
in
right
preparation. So what was the name of the guy, the jackal that they had for a year or two? We did a deep dive in this last year that he has
Mike Sanford.
Yes,
that he's guy in Colorado
has
now.
He has shipwrecked like the last three places he's been.
Yeah, you're
just
right.
Atrocious.
Yep.
So some of it might just be in the preparation. Some of it might be play calling, but the preparation leading up to the game, how comfortable do you feel and stuff? So. Yeah, I thought like, oh, having Rashad Bateman is probably the difference. And it did make a difference in 2019. But he's putting up similar numbers so far.
Yeah, he's looked like a different guy. He, in my opinion, should have been benched last year. He's now back to being, to me, a guy who could at least get into a training camp to try and you know, play.
I could see a camp arm.
He's not a starter. Arm. But I mean, he was almost unplayable at times in 2021. So yeah, that was really impressive.
He could be a camp arm for sure. I could see that.
Yeah. All right. My next statement on what we saw on Saturday. This was not a fluke. This was not a fluke. This was not a, oh yeah, but you're going to play. To Phil's point, look at the schedule, ladies and gentlemen. It does not include Michigan or Ohio State. Michigan State, while certainly they had a terrible day, is not a terrible football team. All right. Look at the rest of this schedule and tell me that your expectation with how the Gophers went on the road and completely steamrolled the Spartans. Tell me that your expectation now is not incredibly high, and it should be, because you didn't like win that game in the last second. It wasn't like we escaped with a win. You kicked their ass, and that's Michigan State. Now look at the rest of the schedule and Wisconsin, which I watched their game against the Buckeyes, and I know it's Ohio State, okay? But they got no quarterback. They have no quarterback. Wisconsin is as beatable as they've ever been. And by the way, the Gophers already have gotten past that step. So it's not like they never beat them. They actually do. Iowa has no quarterback. As long as they stick with that Joker Petrus, you know what? You're in good shape. And you get them here. So you have proven that you can take the axe in Madison. And I might say that the Hawkeyes game might get weird if it was there. But you got them here. Look at the rest of the schedule and tell me that you are pessimistic or, you know, well, that was a fluke. No, it wasn't. This is very real. What is happening here is real. This is not a test. This is real. I know it's weird. I know it feels strange. And I know that there are people like Dex and us to a certain point, but certainly Dex, who are jumping on and telling you, make room on the bandwagon because I'm here. But
give me an oar.
I think this is for real. I really do. It sounds so weird to say.
I love that. I can't tell if Judd is just raising expectations so he can cut these guys down later.
No,
in the
they
year,
beat Michigan State. Actually... No, because they kicked their behinds.
I do want to highlight a couple games. I think we got to take it one game at a time here, okay? One game at a time.
That's not what Judd does.
So you are 10-point favorites over Purdue at home.
Wow.
The next two games after that are very difficult games. I know it's not Ohio State, Michigan, but at Illinois, this is not the old Illinois. This team has talent.
Yep.
This team has three blowout victories and a close road loss against Indiana, but they beat the crap out of Virginia and Wyoming, and then Chattanooga is, and that doesn't really count.
Yep.
But watch what Illinois does in the next 2 weeks at Wisconsin, home against Iowa. If they win those games, and I don't know what the spread is on that Wisconsin game, but that is a game that if they beat both those teams, they're for sure going to be ranked going into the Gophers game on October 15th. And then Penn State is knocking on the door being a top 10 team right now. So if you can clear those two games, you will for sure be a top 15 team, maybe knocking on the door of like top 12 in the country.
Yep.
Then you get the Rutgers, Nebraska, Northwestern stretch where you should roll.
Make hay.
And then Iowa has one of the best defenses in the country. So even if they can't score, like it could be a 10-7 slugfest. that you should win, and then Wisconsin. So
yes.
The Illinois, to me, that if I'm ranking games that scare me the most on the Gopher schedule, number one is at Penn State. Number two is at Illinois. Number three is at Wisconsin. Number four is probably home against Iowa.
Interesting.
The other ones you should win.
And I think, so if you split those two games and you lose at Penn State, it's not a death knell.
No, you can probably lose. You might be able to lose two conference games
exactly.
And win your division.
Yep.
As long as you beat Iowa and Wisconsin and get those tiebreakers.
It's about time, though.
Let's get it.
Make it out.
I got one more for you here. The Gophers' defense is absurd.
Yeah.
Okay. Last 15 games. So this isn't just like the non-con. This is the last 15 games going back to the I'm not counting the Ohio State game because they give up a lot of points in that game. They've given up an average of 12 points per game the last 15 games.
Okay.
Here are the opponent scores. 0, 10, 7, 7 this year. 6, 13, 14 to end the year last year.
Yep.
27, 14, 14, 16, 23, 13, 14, 0 against Colorado last year. So single digits or shutout in 5 of the 15, and then 14 points or fewer in 12 of the 15 games.
Yep. You know what? Write this down. Joe Rossi is going to get a head coaching job after the season.
I think that is this official? Is this
official? Sure. Down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Write this down. Joe Rossi is going to get a head coaching job. I mean, he has done he took a defense that was an abomination, that was embarrassing itself, and almost immediately made huge improvements. And now, to your point, Phil, it's damn good.
Yeah. You can tell opposing, because you're facing young, like 20-year-old kids at quarterback, they can't decipher what they're seeing half the time. And so the athletes on defense are excellent for the Gophers, but they also just seem to do things schematically that throw quarterbacks off. They see ghosts. So any other final Gopher statements before I jump in and steal Declan's segment and fire someone from the college football landscape?
You go right ahead.
Go ahead. I'm curious who you're firing here.
Okay. I think Judd might know who I'm firing here, but this Gopher Love Fest here, presented by our friends at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, been around for over 100 years. They've been huge supporters of Gophers athletics throughout the years, and so I think we're all very happy to be rowing a boat right now. Very exciting. Federated is all about basically providing your business with a great offensive line, one that protects against risks on the horizon. You can find out more about how Federated can help your business at federatedinsurance.com, where it's our business, to protect yours. Ordinarily, it's that time where Declan wants someone's ass fired, and old Macadak's going to come in here and fire someone's ass. So, Declan, you in the first part of Mackie and Judd today.
But you're going to fire Declan, right? So, Dex,
No.
I just wanted to bring this to the show.
No. Declan's amazing. But you spent the first part of the show firing the Fox NFL pregame crew that's been around largely for 30 years. Like Terry and Howie have been in those same chairs since 1994, and Kurt Menefee since like 2006, and Strahan since 2007. So just, it feels a little stale. I was watching College Game Day again this Saturday. Judd, is this the direction you thought that I was going to go?
No, it's not.
Who did you think I was going to fire?
Mel Tucker.
Oh.
The Michigan State coach.
After signing the 9-year contract, yes. Whatever it was?
No. Yes.
I've actually watched every single College Game Day so far this year, at least parts of it, because I enjoy getting up on a Saturday, putting on College Game Day, just seeing the atmosphere, where they're at, the signs and everything. And they did bring in Pat McAfee, who's incredible. Like, he is just a bolt. They got him right in the middle. He's a bolt of lightning. He's saying Rocky Top and got the crowd going. Like, it's a genius move. They basically hired him away from WWE. Can't imagine what they paid for him. But the elephant in the room continues to be Lee Corso.
Yeah. Oh
boy. It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit is basically the ventriloquist, like the puppet operator for ventriloquist Lee Corso at this point. He's got notes that are clearly laid out in front of him, and they only bring him in like a few times per show now. But he's like reading off the notes and stuff. He can barely get through the the headdress thing at the end of the show without stumbling. He's dropped a couple random like F-bombs throughout the last couple of years too, because he just, this dude is a legend, and I don't want to see him go out this way. It is embarrassing what's happening with Lee Corso on Saturdays. And so I'm sorry if Lee can't step away himself. Maybe there's a way they can just do like a via satellite. Like
he puts a segment.
Yeah. Like just at the very end. All right, let's go to Lee. And it's like Lee with. But man, they keep running him out there, and it's brutal to watch. I don't know if you guys have seen any of it this season, but.
I saw a clip on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I mean, I don't know what you do there, because if you fire him, you're gonna get ripped, and if you don't, you're gonna get ripped. So there has to be a better way to do it.
Do you guys know how old he is?
80 something.
Yeah, I would have no idea.
He's 87, man.
Ugh. Yeah,
he's 87. No, I know.
But I mean, he clearly doesn't want to stop, and they clearly don't know what to do.
So they brought in McAfee as kind of like, right. let's exactly. raise the energy.
And McAfee
here
is a genius. I mean, that is an off the charts dream edition.
And I know that this is, we used to have a Mr. Fix It segment on Mackie and Judd. Maybe we need to bring that back, the Mr. Fix It segment. But here's what I would do, okay? Pat McAfee at this point would be 100 times more entertaining as the guy that pulled out the, you know, who made the pick.
Yeah,
you could have McAfee do it for the next 25, 30 years, just like Lee Corso did it. Lee Corso handing that tradition off to Pat McAfee, who gets the crowd ramped up. Because Lee used to be great at playing to the crowd, but now it's like he can't even really play to the crowd because he's 87 years old. So, sorry, I got to say goodbye
it's
to
unfortunate.
Lee Corso, man.
Mm-hmm.
McAfee singing Long Neck Beer with Luke Combs 2 weeks ago was like seriously some of the best television I've seen in a long. It was so entertaining. It's so much fun.
He just leans back and he goes,
long neck. Oh, it's great.
So, all right. Well, we just fired Lee Corso there. So
that's okay.
Pour one out for old Lee Corso.
Thanks, Lee.
You can check out Vikings Vent Line if you missed it after that win against the Lions yesterday over on the Purple Daily YouTube channel and podcast feed. Please click subscribe on both the Score North and Purple Daily YouTube channels. We are within striking distance of 50,000 combined subscribers across the two channels. So
love it.
I think we had an agreement where at one point, if we reached 50,000 YouTube subscribers, Declan would have to brush and ride a horse.
Yes, we did.
I don't know that stands. We can check with Pulford School.
No, that stood in a year. It was a 2021 goal. So that is off the board. I am not brushing or going near a horse.
Okay.
You were never intending to see that through. Even if it had happened.
I would have weaseled my way out of that, no problem.
You really would have.
Yeah, no.
I think we would have had to drug Declan and bring him to my hobby farm that I grew up on.
Your fear of horses is really incredible.
It really is.
Don't like it.
Okay. I guess we'll see you guys tomorrow here on Mackie and Judd, Daily Minnesota Sports Entertainment.
Bye, Mr. Ed.